Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nadeau. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are. We are back with another episode of the show, and I got to tell you, I am very excited for this one. I'm always excited when we record this show, but you know, over the years, there are people that I want to talk about, people that I want to get into, and I'm very excited for today's subject. If you know me, you know, one of my favorite families to talk about is Bonanno crime family. We're going to do that today. However, before we do that, let's welcome back our co-host. We haven't talked to him in a while. He was sick for a couple of weeks, wasn't feeling great, had some things going on with his day job. It's our co-host, Black Jack Fletcher. Black Jack, people have been asking about you, and they're asking where you've been. We're happy to have you back. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, brother. It's good to be back. It's good to be back. We got a good episode today. You know, like you said, March Madness took up a ton of time that first week, and then a little norovirus kind of knocked me on my ass for a few days. So, but I'm good to go, back and ready to talk about Vinny Basciano.
Yeah, Vinny Basciano, the subject today. And, you know, not a lot's known, at least to the public, about Vinny Basciano. A lot of people know, obviously, Joe Bonanno or Joey Messina or Carmine Galanti. But, you know, I got to tell you, Vincent Basciano is a fascinating person. He's a guy that really was a major lunatic, a guy that was really smart, but in the end, really did some things that I think really hurt him. And we're going to get in detailed look into his life. We're going to talk about some of the things that he did, his really ascension to the top of the Bonanno crime family. And he takes over really after Joey Messina goes away. And obviously we know what Joey Messina ultimately did. But one of the things that Joey Messina did was, as we know, flip. And one of the people he was able to give the federal government and some of the multiple murders that Basciano committed. And this is what would have Joey Messina on the streets today. So let's kind of get into it. Before we do that, though, I want to welcome everybody in. As always, we thank you for listening. Blackjack, an announcement to make right out of the gate, and it's something that kind of caught up on me real quick. This is our one-year anniversary of the show. We started this show really about a year ago. I got the notification today on Twitter that it's been a year since I created the account. So it's been a fun year, and you know, we had our 50th episode last week, so yeah. It's amazing how this has all worked out. But yeah, kind of a milestone, if you will.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Yeah, right. So as always, follow us on Twitter at The Sit Down 7. I occasionally post things about the show. Also, check us out on YouTube. Just search The Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast. I'm up to about 9,000 subs on YouTube. And if you want more great mob content, you can catch some videos there. I do about 2 videos a week, kind of report on smaller gangsters and things like that. So make sure if you enjoy our mob content, you like the show, go check us out on YouTube as well. Without further ado, though, we don't like to sugarcoat stuff. Let's get right into the episode. Let's talk about, this is a long one. So I'm gonna say that right now. I did some research on this. I know a lot about the subject. So, Blackjack, let's get into it. Vinny Basciano on the sit-down. Vincent Basciano was born November 14th, 1959 in Yonkers, New York. His father, Gennaro, was actually a stonecutter in New York City. He had a decent job, decent way to make a living. And remember, Vinny Gorgeous was born in 1959, so it's not like he was born in the 20s like a lot of the subject we talk about. Vinny's mother was a homemaker, and he had 2 brothers. And we talk about Yonkers, interesting enough. I mean, not a lot of people we talk about have come from Yonkers. We did an episode on Stephen Crea. Stephen Crea was from that area up in the Bronx and did stuff in Yonkers. But yeah, Vinny Gorgeous would really run the streets pretty early on in his life. He was always known as a smart kid, but he was also known as a tough kid. And weirdly enough, he would do something as a kid that would end up really starting his career and his life never being the same. As a child, he would come to the aid of a young boy in the neighborhood that he had palled around with who was being bullied. This youth, if you will, just happened to be the son of a big-time member of the Bonanno crime family. If you know anything about the Bonanno family, we've talked before about the 3 capos, Dominic Trinchera, Philip Giancone, and Sonny Redden Delicato. The nephew that he had saved Vinny Gorgeous was actually Dominic Big Trin Trinchera. Trinchera was out of the Bronx. He had a social club on Allerton Avenue in the Bronx, and he was a big timer up there. And what would happen was, as a teenager, you know, Vinny Gorgia starts palling around with Trinchera. He starts going to the social club. He starts cleaning up. He starts doing things. Eventually is able to drive, starts driving Trent around. And, you know, this would be obviously the big thing. And weirdly, what would happen is he would start to show up at different events involving high-end Bonanno people. He'd show up at weddings. He'd show up at the social clubs. He was all around. And, you know, Blackjack, the common theme, the thing that we notice about every gangster we talk about, it all comes full circle. Everyone seems to know everyone in the mob, and everyone has a mentor. Everyone has someone that leads them into this life. And as I said, I mean, Vinny Gorgias, his family was not in the mafia. His father was a construction worker, basically. His mother was a normal woman. But whatever social circle you're in, whatever nationality you're in, you don't want to be your father a lot of the time. Because your father's breaking his back to make a living for you. You want to be the guy in the corner making money. And Big Trend was able to quickly show Vinny Gorgias that the life that his father lived probably wasn't the one he wanted to live.
Yeah, I mean, two things there, right? First, I think that, you know, we all want to have a better life than our parents did, right? Whether that means an easier life or more money, or maybe it means, you know, more time to enjoy the things that you love in life. We all want to have a little bit better life than our parents. And I think that's what most parents want for their kids. And, you know, Vinny Basciano is no different. His father, as you said, was breaking his back as a construction worker. He probably saw that and said, you know, I'd like to have a little bit easier life than what my dad has. And, you know, the other thing is, you talked about, you know, him coming to the aid of a young kid who was being bullied. That's kind of interesting, right? Because we talk about a lot of these guys' childhoods, and in a lot of instances, they are the bullies, right? Like, they're the ones who are on the street corner kind of roughing kids up. You know, I'm always reminded of Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano, right? Like, Luciano was impressed when he stood up to him. But, you know, most of the guys, I would say, are more of the bully role than Basciano, who, you know, took up for this kid, and it probably really endeared him to Big Trend.
Yeah, they're running gangs. They're, you know, sticking people up. They're doing things. You're right about that. It's not one that we really have seen, quite honestly. As we know, in the late 70s, the Bonanno crime family really was kind of in a mess. Carmen Glanty been killed. Joey Messino is jockeying for power alongside the Sonny Black Napolitano crew. They're kind of going at another faction involving the three Capos, Trinchera, Giancone, and Sonny Red. And as we know, the boss of the family at this point is Philip Restelli. He's in prison. So Joey Messino and the Sonny Black group come up with this idea: let's get rid of the three Capos. So in 1981, we've talked about this, Trinchera, Giancone, and Indelicato were killed inside a nightclub. That would be problematic for Vincent Basciano because his mentor was now dead. And at that time, Vinny's in his early 20s. So he's indebted to Trinchera. This has been his mentor. But the lucky for him is he's been indebted into the family. Some people know him. And he actually, at this point, starts palling around the Bronx with a guy called Anthony Colangelo. Colangelo was nicknamed Tony Cole. He was a big-time bookmaker in the Bronx. He was on Pleasant Avenue in the Bronx, was big in bookmaking, had a huge network of people. He also was big into numbers, had a huge gambling operation. And I think he really liked Vinny's panache. Vinny was a tough kid, but as I said, he was smart. And I think Colangelo kind of looked at it and said, you know, eventually I might want to get out of the bookmaking business, maybe spend more time with my family. I can maybe indebt some of my stuff with him. He can run it. Everything will go well. And Vinny starts dealing with collections. He starts collecting numbers, tickets, and all sorts of things. And he'd actually, at one point, be approached by Tony Cole. And Tony Cole would say, hey, look, you know, I want to start getting into other rackets. Why don't you handle this bookmaking stuff for me? Here's what I asked, though. And Tony Cole was actually about to get indicted, so he had kind of seen the writing on the wall. All Tony Cole asked for was, hey, take care of my girlfriend, kick up to her, you know, to make sure she's good, you know, make sure she's set while I'm away. And this was kind of what Tony Cole wanted. I mean, obviously you do all this for your family a lot of the time. And, you know, Tony Cole was a bon vivant. Everybody knew him, respected him. He was a well-known guy in the Bronx. And, you know, this was a good situation for Vinny. In 1985, though, it wouldn't take long for Vincent Bacciano to start getting involved with some really crazy things, quite honestly. In 1985, there was an individual named David Nunez that worked for a rival numbers collector through one person or another. Vinny Bacciano and a group of individuals find out that this individual has a large amount of money. He's leaving a numbers operation. He goes at this guy, David Nunez, and alongside a guy, Patty DiFilippo, and one of Bacciano's friends, Anthony Donato, they shoot David Nunez multiple times, allegedly. Nunez survives, and they pull away and get away and whatnot. Vincent gets away. The other two remain in the car, and they're brought in. Nunez would ultimately identify them, and he'd say, I know who they were, even though they had masks on, everything. Nunez was with it. He knew what was going on. I guess, though, he realizes kind of what's going on a few days later and realizes, oh, wait a second, I don't necessarily want to identify these individuals. And he recants everything he IDs them with. They would ultimately beat the rap. The problem for Vinny Gorgeous, though, was he would be arrested for having an illegal gun and get a year in prison. So, you know, in his early 20s, he's the head of a bookmaking operation. He's slowly making that ascent, doing what he has to do. Now, ultimately, he didn't make his bones here. You know, this individual never died, but you know, he's going out and doing strong arm things for members of the mafia or an associate of the mafia. And, you know, this is how you make your ascension, Blackjack, into the life.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we've seen this time and time again, and, you know, he gets the racket, which is kind of, you know, to get his feet wet with the bookmaking. And it's a great opportunity, right? Because there's very little pressure in terms of all you got to do is just do it right. Right. I mean, there's nobody watching over him 24/7. He's got to kick the money up, do the thing legit, and he'll be fine. You know, and the Nunez thing, I mean, listen, it sucks to do a year, but it could have been a hell of a lot worse. I mean, Nunez obviously got the gist of what was going on here and quickly recants that story, which is the only decision he can make at that point. So the year is unfortunate for Vinny, but it's not the worst thing that could have happened.
Yeah, and he only does a couple of months. He comes home. Everything's good. But Vincent Bacciano realizes that, you know what, I'm trying to be in the mafia. Why am I going to continue to kick up $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month to Tony Colangelo? He's in jail. Eventually gets out. You know what? Instead of worrying about this, I'm just going to eliminate Tony Cole. In May of 1987, Tony Cole's family, including his sons, were reported missing. Several days later, his body would be found in a large black bag in Greenberg, New York. Now, one of the sons of Tony Cole, as well as the girlfriend, would say that he claimed the day that he went missing that he'd be fine. He was, quote, with the kids. Now, the kids would be referring to Donato and Bacciano. He acted as a mentor to those guys. They were in their 20s. And he said he'd be fine because nothing would go on because he was with them. Now, ultimately, down the road, Vinny Gorgeous would be brought in for this stuff. He'd be talked about this. Tony Cole was dead, and the main suspect was clearly Vinny Gorgeous because Vinny Gorgeous would ultimately take control of all the bookmaking operations. So, you know, he's becoming a very shiesty, squirmy kind of guy, Blackjack. He's realizing early that this is treacherous. This is the mob. And, you know, if I want something, I just have to go take it. Right. In 1990, he's really making money because this is a big time bookmaking operation. And he's really connected in the mid 80s, as I mentioned, with a guy called Patty from the Bronx, DiFilippo. DiFilippo was a long time member of the mob. He had been inducted back into the 70s. DiFilippo's father goes way back into life. He was close with Joe Bonanno, his father Vito, and Patty from the Bronx was very connected. He had been in life for a long time. He had been made a capo regime, and he had his own huge bookmaking operation. So in kind of typical fashion, he kind of slots in with Patty from the Bronx, and they have a huge operation because Vinny has his, he has his. They're pretty much ruling the Bronx when it comes to bookmaking. So this is a big thing, and Vinny starts making real money. He invests in a blimpy restaurant, a sub shop, a video store, all sorts of stuff. His star is rising.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're starting to see the beginning of ambition, right? Like you're starting to see someone who has been doing this now for a little while, and he sees what he can become. And I think you're starting to see that ambition develop. You know, he's 26, 27 or so, whatever it is. And he's starting to really see, all right, if I'm going to have a life here, I could make this a good one if I go about it the right way.
Yeah, that's 100%. And, you know, from what I know, there's a great book about Vincent Bassiano called Vinny Gorgeous, The Ugly Rise and Fall of a New York Mobster. And in that book, they talk about how even like Vincent Bassiano was always very charming. He had a lot of panache, as I said. And even when he would make sandwiches, they would talk about it. He would actually go to work every day and like put work in and try to get to know the customers. And he was very with it. He realized that, you know, that's kind of how you had to act. And, you know, that's the way you become someone that takes over a neighborhood. Now, interestingly enough, Blackjack, at one point inside the Blimpy restaurant, a witness would claim that at one point a bookmaker that owed Vinny Gorgeous money came in. And I guess the individual didn't have the money. The witness would claim he heard Bassiano say, quote, "We'll take care of you the way we took care of the old man from Pleasant Avenue. You'll find your ass in the woods in Greenberg." Now, that would reference Tony Cole, probably. So he did have a sadistic side to him, you know, so he's making a pastrami and cheese sandwich as he tells someone, "Hey, we're going to fucking kill you if you don't have my money." Now, by 1991, he not only takes his money and invests in video stores and different restaurants, but he also owns a nail salon, and he would turn it in and convert it into a salon where he'd put his wife up and she would run it, his wife, Angela, and he would call it Hello Gorgeous. That was the restaurant name or the salon name. And that's where Vinny Gorgeous got his name. For a long time, Vinny Gorgeous was known as Vinny from the Bronx, but this would give him his name, Vinny Gorgeous. Now, if you've ever seen Vincent Bassiano, good looking guy, always had very coiffed hair, dressed well. We'd have to say, Blackjack, if we ever, you know, let's say we had a woman come on and grade gangsters, I'd have a feeling he would be up there looks-wise. Good-looking guy.
The word you've used, panache, twice now is the absolute perfect
word. I like that word, huh?
It's the perfect word for him because he, you know, obviously everyone knows, you know, John Gotti in his $3,000 suits and whatever. But, like, Vincent Bassiano just looked like a million bucks, like top to bottom, right? I mean, his hair, as you mentioned, was great. You know, he obviously had a sense of style that was his own, but it just, everything worked, and you don't find a bad photo of the guy.
No, even in relating to his life, like he's put some pictures up recently in prison and he's gained a little weight, but he still looks, you know, good. He still looks healthy. By 1991, as I said, he starts aligning himself with a high-end capo, Patty from the Bronx, DeFilippo, and he's in his crew. He then acts as his mentor. So the thing about Vinny Bassiano is he was smart enough and cunning enough to know that he's not just going to be able to do this on his own. He needs to continue to make, you know, connections. He needs to continue to meet people. But this is now two straight people that have been mentors to him that have turned up dead in relation, not always to him, but they've turned up dead. And also by this point in the family, 1991, Joey Messino takes over as the boss of this family completely. And this is where we see, as we said, and I've always said this, we got a lot of flack for this. Joe Messino is one of the great bosses, really, since Carlo Gambino, frankly. As a boss of a family, we talked about it during that episode, Blackjack. Joey Messino was a very good boss, okay? It's that simple. The Bonanno family had a lot of bullshit, really, from the early 70s when Joe Bonanno does what he does till when Joey Messino takes over. The 70s and 80s were a complete fucking mess for the Bonannos. They had the Donnie Brasco stuff. They had the Carmine Galanti shit. They had the Three Capos upheaval. They had all sorts of shit that went on. And Joe Messino really took them through a lot of you know, violent waters and really cooled a lot of things. And the family was changing, and Vinnie Gorgeous was a perfect guy for down the road, maybe be in a leadership position. He would begin to be seen a lot, Vincent Bachiano, at Joey Messina's club in Maspeth. Indications were by this point he would probably have been inducted into the family, and he was sponsored by Patty from the Bronx, DiFilippo. By this point, as I said, he was making a lot of money. He had businesses. He was also married and had four sons by this point. All indications were he was a very good father. And he actually moved his family out to Scarsdale, which was a very uppity, affluent area. He had a nice home out in Scarsdale, and you know, his kids were playing baseball and in sports and things of that nature. Real nice area in Westchester County. You're familiar with the Blackjack?
I am. Scarsdale's always been a nice area.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in 2020, Business Insider would actually write that it's one of the East Coast richest towns. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So definitely a very nice place. And he was living the life. I mean, Vinnie Gorgeous had it all. He was in a fledgling crime family that was becoming very powerful again. I mean, at one point, Blackjack, there were certain Genoveses on record on wiretaps that were saying that, you know, their family and Joe's family were the most powerful, obviously being Joe Messina's. The FBI wasn't bothering with them. They were worried about other families, and they were just doing what they do. Now, in 1991, towards the end of that year, I think the feds started to figure out who Vinnie Gorgeous was, and they started to put two and two together and kind of realize, how does this individual who's, you know, 32, how does he have all this? How does he have this home in Scarsdale? We obviously know he's involved with bookmaking probably, but a lot of the money he had, it didn't seem to make sense. And what would happen is an individual would be arrested in 1991 called Anthony Batoni. Now, Batoni was an associate of Basciano. He had known him from his days of knowing Tony Cole. He was an old 50-something bookmaker. His home is raided. And it comes out that Batoni is involved with a huge heroin ring out of Manhattan. At one point, the heroin ring is making about $20 million a month. It's making a lot of money. And the feds are kind of trying to put two and two together, and they're kind of alleging that maybe this is how Basciano is making his money. He's readily available. He's maybe financing this or involved in some way. Basciano's home would also be raided, and they would find $230,000 in cash. Basciano would claim that he got it in Atlantic City gambling. It was always known that Vinnie Gorgeous had a gambling issue, like many mobsters. Now, from 1985 to 91, the feds actually alleged, Blackjack, that this drug empire made about $100 million. It was run by Latin gang members in Manhattan. And, you know, Basciano gets arrested, no bail. This is when he hires Ben Braffman. And if you know about defense attorneys, which you do, Blackjack, Ben Braffman is among the best. The guy that celebrities go to. He's kind of the, you know, I wouldn't say he's Roy Cohen, but he's definitely someone that is a high-end guy. He defended Diddy. He defended Plaxico Burress. Defended Jay-Z, yep. Harvey Weinstein. I know a couple of years ago, he defended Martin Shkreli, the securities guy. So this is a high-end attorney. Vinny hires him, and he's going to take on his case.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Braffman is the biggest hired gun in New York City when it comes to criminal defense. So, you know, if you need a guy and you're in a spot, he's the guy. You know, and it's interesting, you know, they find this cash and he attributes it to gambling, and they're looking at his lifestyle and trying to figure it all out. I mean, Blimpie sandwiches used to be real popular.
But it doesn't. It's hard to believe that it would give you a house in Scarsdale.
It is.
You know? Like, I can understand if maybe had 20 of them or something, but you know, one and like a salon, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, there's a little too much.
And what do we know about drug trafficking? I mean, it is a good way to take, you know, let's say you're making money from a bookmaking operation, you go buy kilos and you start funding that, and you know, it's just a way to make some money, a lot more money. So he would be hit with no bail. Ultimately, he would get bail, and I want to kind of talk about what would happen in between his trial and everything that went on here. In 1992, there was a very publicized incident that went down in the mafia. And if you know mob history, you've heard of this. Blackjack, you've heard about in 1992, there was a couple that was going around and robbing mob social clubs, right? Mm-hmm. Tom and Rosemary Uva. They were a couple that was down in their luck. They were drug addicts, and they decided they were going to start robbing mob social clubs. Why not, right? I mean, they don't have guns there. They have a lot of money. They're not going to call the cops. So they get the idea to do it. And they start doing it. They start breaking down Gambino clubs. They hit a couple Bonanno clubs as well. And by the end of 92, the mob puts an open contract on them. The Bonanos put a contract out. Gambino's put a contract out. In December of 92, the two are hit in Queens and killed. After that, certain families start jockeying and trying to say they did it. Now, ultimately, it was the Bonanno crime family that was not involved with it, but that did not stop them from saying they were involved with it. Ultimately, the Gambinos did it. There were people in the Gambinos that took care of it. But what would happen is Patty from the Bronx, who was Vinny's mentor, he would get in some hot water after Gorgeous and Donato, his friend, went to Patty from the Bronx and said, hey, we took out the Uvas. Patty takes it, runs to Joe Messina, all happy and excited. But then it comes out that they didn't actually do it. And Joey Messina is furious about all this. He goes back to Patty from the Bronx and vilifies him about it and slaps him in the head, basically. What the hell are you doing? But nothing ever ultimately happens to Basciano and Donato, which is kind of interesting. I mean, I feel like they should have been disciplined for that behavior. Now, ultimately, two people in the Gambinos were brought to trial on this. They were never convicted. But either way, you have to wonder, what was the reasoning on doing that? Is it, I guess, just to collect some quick points, or it's not like anyone wouldn't figure it out. I always wondered what would be the reasoning for pretending to do a hit you didn't do.
It's got to be, like you said, to just try and accrue some credit, right? Because, you know, I mean, a lot of these things sometimes, oh, one guy says he did it, one guy says he did it. Who knows? Maybe they were just hoping it wouldn't. My guess is they were hoping that maybe it wouldn't even get all the way to Messina, that maybe it would just be something that, you know, Patty kept to himself and said, my guys took care of this.
Well, but you know, the mob, and you're always looking for points above you. So you might give a couple extra dollars in the envelope or, you know, and look, Patty from the Bronx was a powerful guy. He made a lot of money, and it was a good way to score quick points with Joey Messina. Sure. But in 1994, he would actually have to face trial for his alleged role in that drug case. He would ultimately get acquitted, though. Multiple members of the case would flip, but the Braffman did a good job in really connecting. There was no evidence that he was ever connected to drug trafficking. They couldn't prove anything, and Vinny would ultimately walk out of court happy. It was another feather in the cap for Vinny Gorgeous as he made his ascent. He continues really just dealing with his businesses, solving disputes, doing what he does. But I want to talk about something that would happen in 1999 that would be ultimately a problem for not only Vinny Gorgeous, but really the Bonanos in general. In 1999, Joe Messina is in control of the family. They're a well-oiled machine. They have no informants. They're very much running at a high level. There's a high-end individual in the family named Gerlando George from Canada, Schiacia. Schiacia was a Canadian who came from Italy, that was very much the conduit between Montreal and Canada and the Bonanno family. He was a representative that lived in New York. He was a big drug dealer, and he had been around forever. I mean, this is a guy born in the 30s. He'd been around forever. He actually participated in the Three Capos hit many years ago. So he always had a connection to Joey Messina. At one point, I think Joey Messina realizes that this guy, Schiacia, might try to jockey power like he did many years before. And he had also, Schiacia, gotten into an argument with Anthony Graziano, TG. He was a big-time capo in the family, was close to Joey Messina. He would call Graziano a junkie at some point, call him an addict, saying that he was on drugs half the time. And Joey Messina got really pissed off about that. And I think he also worried that Schiacia was going to try to take his spot. Schiacia is a marked man. And at a party, Joey Messina goes to Sal Vitale, his brother-in-law and underboss, and says, hey, Schiacci needs to go. And I want Patty from the Bronx to do it. Now, this is kind of crazy, Blackjack, because as I said, Patty from the Bronx is not some random guy associate. He's a capo who's been around forever, but he was trusted. Joey Messina wanted it to look like a drug deal going bad. No one will ever suspect Patty. Let Patty do it. So Patty hits Schiacci. His body's found. He does it alongside a guy, Johnny Joe Spirito. He's the wheel man. Now, Montreal ends up kind of finding out about this. And this was kind of a problem for the Bonanno crime family because they weren't happy. But this would also indebt that, you know, Patty from the Bronx and Vinny the Gorgeous were trusted and very high end at this point. And, you know, you look at it, Blackjack, it almost worked out for Basciano because what do we know about him at this point? He's a huge earner. You get Montreal out of the way, he's now the number one guy. Everybody knows him. He's the big earner, him and Patty from the Bronx. It was kind of a move by them. It ended up working out. But it was problematic because at some point, Patty from the Bronx have to deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's a big step up for them as a crew, right? I mean, it probably elevates them to the number one crew.
Exactly.
The family at that point. So it's a big, big step up. But as you said, you know, you're going to have to deal with that at some point. I mean, those chickens are going to come home to roost.
Right, because the feds are always looking at these different things. And this would be a huge problem for Joey Messina, okay? And we're going to bookmark this and come back to it. Vinny, as you alluded to, is part of Patty's crew. They have one of the strongest in the family. Vinny's also using his connections to get involved in different things, including construction projects. He also is starting to create his own little crew as well. You know, it's kind of a pyramid in the mafia, right? You have a mentor, then you become a guy, then you get your own crew, then you get your own. So Vinny starts creating his own little crew as well. He starts piling around with a guy called Dominic Ciccoli. He was a young guy that his father was connected to mob. He also starts hanging around with, I don't want to call them rejects, but I will. He starts hanging around with a couple of rejects. Now, little background, Blackjack. There was a crew in the 90s called the Giannini crew. They were a farm team for the mob, one of the most violent crews ever. In fact, the guest last week that I talked to, Frank Fiordalino, he was involved with the Giannini crew. We talked about them at length. And Frank told me about the individual, Ace Aiello, that Basciano started dealing with. He told me he was one of the toughest people he had ever met. He lived two doors away from him, really tough guy. So Vinny's starting to hang around these younger kids. They're starting to do work for him. He's starting to build his own little crew. And this was big for Vinny Gorgeous because as any ascension in the mob goes, you have to walk before you run. Eventually you start making money. And then you get so big, you have to start delegating things to other people. And, you know, this was really a great time for Vinny Gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, he's as you've alluded to, Jeff, he's on the come up here in a big way. You know, he's part of the top crew in the family. He's starting to, you know, branch out into having his own people under him, which only results in more money getting kicked up to him and more that he can kick up, which makes him look like an even better earner. You know, they've been involved in some dirtier stuff. So, you know, he's able to kind of show himself that way. He's also withstood, you know, being tried by the government, and, you know, there was no issue there. So at this point, his star is rising pretty quick.
Yeah. And obviously the feds are starting to figure out who he is. At one point he was caught on wiretap saying, quote, "I'm a hoodlum. I'm a tough guy. Whatever happens, happens. Let's go." So, you know, he's a guy that, you know, really had accepted, this is what I do. I'm not really worried about the fate of what happens, and I'm going to do what I have to do. And
who he was.
Yeah. And this is where we've talked about. There could be earners, there could be killers. It's hard to be both though. Vinny Gorgeous was who he was and became what he's about to be and what we're about to talk about because he was willing to take anyone at any point. And he was also a guy that made a lot of money, and they don't make a lot of guys like these. And these are how you become, you know, the Joe Messinos or the John Gottis, as opposed to just these random, you know, soldiers or whoever. So Vinnie Gorgeous had that. In 2001, though, he would have to take care of another loose end. An individual in the neighborhood named Frank Santora would turn up dead. And the hammers start coming down on Frank Santora, or on not only Frank Santora, but on Vinnie Bachano. Santora was a drug addict who was starting to kind of act stupid. He started doing his own supply. He was a drug dealer, started to take his product. And at one point, he threatens to kidnap one of Bachano's sons. You're not going to do that. Bachano is going to do what he has to do. And this Santora ends up dead. Now, we would ultimately find out years later that Ciccoli, this was his bone, making his bones hit. He would be instructed by Bachano to kill Frank Santoro. Again, though, all these murders just kind of building up. None of these were ever solved. And the government would, for a long time, try to solve these murders, but they couldn't do it. And things start coming down. The feds are starting to watch Patty DeFilippo. They're starting to watch Vinnie Gorgeous. But in 2002, Vinnie gets a big promotion. Joey Messina makes him a captain. And I think Joey Messina maybe at some points kind of was worried about Vinnie Gorgeous, but I think he also realized that, hey, if anything ever happens to me, I got to set the stage for the next people up. And Vinnie probably was that guy. Things would start to really, though, come undone around 2002, early 2003 for the Bonanno crime family. Up until this point, they had no informants, nothing out of the ordinary. But what starts to happen is the feds start looking at the Bonanno family and saying, okay, we've not worried about this group for a while, but they're still very much in power. They start going at certain people and saying, okay, we've got you on tape. We've got you on tape. So they go to a guy, Frank Coppa. They go to a guy, Richard Cantarella. Both of those individuals flip. And what Cantarella starts talking about is Vinnie Gorgeous. In fact, at one point, Cantarella would claim that Joey Messina always worried about Vinnie Gorgeous. He said he was kind of a bizarre guy. He was always kind of worried. He never totally trusted him. And the axe would begin to fall as well. In 2003, early 2003, Joey Messina would be arrested. And he would be arrested on multiple counts of murder, racketeering. And we know how he was picked up. According to the FBI, there were two individuals, FBI agents, that were specializing in, you know, basically money. And they pieced together through checks and through money laundering. That was how they were able to get Joey Messina. And I'm always fascinated by when they arrest people. And the FBI agent that would arrest Joey Messina talked about, he would go and knock on his door. And Joey Messina would walk, oh, he'd waddle over. And Joey Messina goes, I expected you guys yesterday. And he gets in the truck and they start driving. At that point, he turns to FBI agent Jeffrey Sillette and says, have you picked up my brother-in-law as well? Which the FBI thought was weird. And they said, yeah, we picked him up. Sillette would talk that they talked about food on the way over. And he would tell the FBI agents, hey, you should come into my club, Casablanca. We've got great pizza. We use great sauce. But Joey Messina, I think when he got to prison that night or in the next week, he kind of realized, you know what? Unlike any other time, I'm pretty fucked. There's multiple people that are flipping on me. They've got Sal. I know he's probably soft. But I think he felt on the streets is that he had a good group of people. He would promote one of his emissaries, Tony Urso, to the job of acting boss. Tony Urso was a longtime confidant of Messina. In fact, he had really known Messina since the 70s. Tony Urso was very trusted by Joe Messina, and he actually would be a part of kind of a triumvirate that would handle the family. And Vinnie Bachano was on that panel. So he's making his ascent up higher and higher. The problem for Joe Messina, though, as we know, is 1 month after the arrest, Salvatore Vitale flips and becomes a member of the government. So Blackjack, this is a major problem for Joe Messina, because I think Joe Messina basically thought, well, I'll beat this thing, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Not really. That was going to sink you.
Yeah, we talked about it in the Messina episode. The Vitale thing is as dirty, is as dirty a flip as there is. And yeah, it puts Messina in a really, really tight spot that he realistically doesn't have a way out of. And it's just so ironic for a family that, as you said, had no informants, which is so incredible to think of during the 80s and 90s when the government was just coming with such a heavy hammer, to have nobody flip, to survive into the 2000s and still have the power and the control that they did, for it all to come down so quickly is just, it really is an incredible thing. And you can put a huge heaping of that at the feet of Sal Vitale.
Yeah. And this is kind of sends the Bonanos, as you said, you know, the leadership goes away, and this kind of sends the Bonanno crime family spiraling out of control. They're also having the feds. They had multiple rats inside the family that were on the streets, including a guy called James Tartaglione. Tartaglione was a high up, and he was recording multiple members of the family while this is going on. In fact, at one point in September 2003, as I said, Tony Urso, Tony Green, who I talked about, he was the acting boss. Think of Gianni Russo, kind of has that look to him. Always was tan, had spiked hair, kind of an old Guido that never gave it up. Even I cut my blow it off. Eventually you have to do it. In September of 2003, Tartaglione would meet Tony Urso alongside Vinnie Bassiano at a restaurant. He would say, Tony Urso, quote, "It's got to stop. Now this one's a rat. That one says, well, fuck it. If he can do it, I can do it. You tell them, whoever turns will wipe your family out. If you take one kid, I hate to say it, and do what you got to do, they'll fucking think twice. How would Sal feel if I killed one of his kids?" That was pretty damning, quite honestly. And this is the kind of thing that was saying. I mean, they were shell-shocked, quite honestly. They were shell-shocked that Sal was flipping and Coppola was flipping and Cantarella was flipping. And most notably, Joey Messina was fucked, pretty much.
Yeah, they were in a tailspin, and they had never had the experience of dealing with this before. So nobody really knew what to do here.
Yeah, and for Tony Urso, the guy that just made that crazy comment, 2004, he would actually be picked up and taken off the street as well. So, I mean, the family is slowly but surely being picked off. The feds kind of said, you know what? One by one, we're going to eliminate the leadership of this family. So let's kind of backtrack. Joey Messina is locked up. Tony Urso is locked up. Sal Vitale is locked up. The triumvirate is locked up, but this would be good news for none other than Vinnie Gorgeous. At 40 years old, he would become boss of the Bonanno crime family. And it was really the person that should have most been in control. Michael Mancuso is named underboss, and Fat Anthony Rubito is named consigliere. Messina's trial would begin in 2004. And by that point, Blackjack, not three, not four, not six, but seven informants would be involved in that case, including one other one, Sammy Gravano, who would flip and testify in this trial as well. On July 30th, 2004, after a month or so trial, Joey Messina would be convicted and really face the worst of the worst, seven murders. In one, he was eligible for the death penalty. Now, let's backtrack, Blackjack. The one he's eligible for the death penalty, it was that none other than George from Canada murder. Yep. That we talked about, that he killed him basically over a joke that he made. And it ended up being the one that may have changed the landscape of the Bonanno crime family as we know it. Immediately after the trial on July 30th, 2004, Joey Messina was seen in the back room of the courthouse. He would then quietly ask to speak with Jeffrey Sillette in the judge's chambers. At that point, it was pretty obvious Joey Messina was going to cooperate. He was going to be a sitting boss, and he was going to cooperate. Now, the feds said, you know what? Let's keep this all secret. He's going to jail anyway. He just gets life. He's still going to get sentenced. Let's act like this is normal. Let's throw him back into the bullpen like nothing happened, and let's wire him up. Now, Bassiano is involved on the streets in a lot of things, construction, bookmaking, extortion, really whatever he can get his hands in. Now, this is where I think for me, I was in on Bassiano. Like, I thought he was a good gangster. I thought he was the perfect gangster, quite honestly. He had it all. He was powerful. He was rich. He had the balls to do what he had to do. But this is where I started to kind of not understand Vinny Bastiano. 2004, as we know, the family's a complete mess, right? We can agree with that, right?
A little mess.
Yeah. An individual that Bastiano is doing work with, a guy called Randy Pozzola. He was an associate of the Bonanno family. He starts kind of doing stupid shit. He's not giving Vinny Gorgeous the amount of money he's supposed to give him. He at one point goes to a club, starts acting like an asshole, really starts to act like a dickhead. Vincent Bastiano decides behind the scenes that enough is enough. I don't want to deal with this fucking kid anymore. He goes to Michael Mancuso, his underboss and friend, and says, tell the kid, meaning Ciccoli and Ace Aiello, to get rid of Pozzola. I want him dead. And I think at certain points, people in the family said, well, do we really want to do this? This might affect our boss in jail. This might bring a lot of waves to the family. Vinny Bastiano didn't give a fuck. He said, I don't care. I want him dead. And they drug their feet for a while on this. In November 9, 2004, Vinny Gorgeous is finally arrested, and he's charged with the murder of Frank Santoro. And this would kind of drop. So, you know, slowly but surely, Black Chip, between 2002 and 2004, pretty much everyone in the ruling panel, the Bonannos, was in prison.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Jeff, it came down hard and fast. You know, the entire upper management, if you will, of that family was either an informant or imprisoned at that point. And that's not a way for any organization to survive. And as far as Bastiano goes, I mean, listen, some power suits some people differently than others, right? And as much as he may have been something of a level-headed guy and knew what he needed to do, when you're the guy calling the shots, sometimes people start to act a little differently, and they think they need to assert their authority, and they need to, you know, let people know who's in charge. And that can often lead to bad decisions, as this was.
Yeah. So Joe Massino's in jail, Vinny's in jail. So the bosses are locked up. No bail for Bastiano. He goes to MDC, and guess who's in MDC? Joe Massino. Now, I will tell this, in my conversation last week with Frank Fiordalino, he actually was also in MDC at this point. We talked about his relationship with Joe Massino. He kind of acted as kind of a, not a gopher, but he acted as kind of an emissary, knew Joe Massino. He had told me regularly he would see Bastiano and Massino palling around together. Sure. But in 2004, December of 2004, a month after Vincent Bastiano goes away, on a very cold December night in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, the body of Randolph Pozzola turns up next to a BMW in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, on Monitor Street. And the streets start talking. Pozzola's dead. The people involved go into the wind. Ciccoli flees. Ace Aiello flee. They're out. And I think Joe Massino ends up obviously reading this in the paper. It's on front page. And by this point, he's recording Vinny Gorgeous. He walks up to him in the bullpen and says, who ordered that hit? And on tape, Bastiano basically says, I did. He fucking deserved it. He's an annoying fucking kid. And this is kind of the nonsense and, you know, kind of thing that Bastiano was doing. I mean, you really kind of went nuts and you just start killing people as you're in prison. You're doing stuff. At one point as well, in conversations, Vincent Bastiano considered at one point going and killing a U.S. prosecutor, a guy, Greg Andre.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vinny Gorgeous is basically talked off the ledge. And Joe Massino says to him, you know, what would you have to gain by doing that? But he pretty much just started marching to the beat of his own drum. At one point, Massino would be asked in court, because he would testify, why did Vincent Bastiano kill Pozzola? Massino would respond, he said he was a scumbag, a rat, a troublemaker, a bad kid. He was chased from bars and people refused to go to bars with him. That's why he killed him.
That's not the greatest reason in the world.
No. And he's starting to really go crazy. He's starting to try to like want to kill prosecutors and all sorts of stuff. And we've Joe Massino's
before. When you start talking about wanting to take out a prosecutor, you've lost it. you've gone full Will Smith at that point. Like, you've lost it.
Right. No, he's completely off the deep end. Another situation would come up involving a different family. In May of 2004, the body of Nicholas Cirillo would turn up in the Bronx. Now, the body would be identified as Nick Cirillo. That would point to the acting boss at one point in the Genovese crime family. Quiet Dom Cirillo was the emissary of Chin Gigante Blackjack. He was basically the mentor, or not the mentor, the messenger for Gigante. He was a very powerful guy in the Genovese family. He had a son, Nicholas. This kid was a drug addict, junkie. He gets into a fight at some point in 2004 with Vinnie Gorgeous's kid, right? And pushes him and assaults him or whatever. At one point then, Cirillo turns up dead. In prison, Joey Messina goes to Vinnie Gorgeous and says, hey, what happened with the Cirillo kid? Was that us that did that? Vinnie Gorgeous responds, quote, no, that came from Dom. That came from Dom. So what I'm basically saying is, it's alleged to this day, Dom Cirillo had his own son killed for his behavior. As a favor to Vinnie Gorgeous. Now, Dom Cirillo is still alive. He's like 92 years old, I think. But his son was killed. And this was another wild thing that was said during this. Now, I don't think Vinnie had anything to do with it, but, you know, this would be connected there as well. So Vinnie Gorgeous is really kind of going off the deep end. He would also get bad news after he would find out that eventually his friend in all this, Dom Ciccoli, would flip as well. Anthony Aiello, the individual that killed Pozzola, he would turn up and be arrested as well. So Vinnie Gorgeous had to realize that he was going to face many murder attempts. Also, Blackjack, one of the final things Vinnie Gorgeous does is he goes to Joey Messina and tries to get approval to kill his old mentor, Patrick Patty from the Bronx, DeFilippo. He believes that Patty DeFilippo is trying to anchor power and take power away from them at some point, and they have an issue, and Vinny wants to kill him. So Vinny has to face the music on all these things. And, you know, he pretty much had to realize that he was probably screwed. I mean, Ciccoli was a rat. He didn't know that Joe Messina was a rat, but he would have to deal with that. In February 27th of 2005, the trial would begin. Sal Vitale and Dom Ciccoli were used as witnesses. And Ciccoli would say in his testimony that he was the one that was instructed to kill Frank Santoro on behalf of Vincent Basciano. And he would also, at one point, Vinnie Gorgeous, during his time in holding during the trial, he would write a letter to his longtime girlfriend, Deborah Kolb, who he had had a child with out of wedlock. He would, quote, say, when I found out Dom flipped, it broke my heart. He would also get more bad news. His wife, Angela, would file for divorce after she found out that he had bore a child with his gumada. So things went from being on top of the world for Vinnie Gorgeous to, quite honestly, the bottom. Vinnie Gorgeous was fucked. It was pretty simple. In July of 2007, he'd be found guilty on multiple murders. But he would still have to face another trial in the Pozzola hit where he may face the death penalty. And the government would go back and forth on that. In 2011, that trial would start. And guess what Vinnie Gorgeous found out, Blackjack?
That he had another rat to deal with?
Yep. The chief witness was none other than Joey Messina. He walked in a suit. And I often wonder, I don't think I'll ever get the opportunity to ask, but I often wonder what on earth was Vinnie Gorgeous thinking when he saw Joey Messina walk in?
Nothing good.
Could you imagine?
Nothing good, my friend.
During his conversation, I want to talk a little bit about the testimony of Joe Messina. Prosecutor Taryn Merkel would ask him, quote, what happened in 2004? Messina would respond, I went to trial and I got convicted and decided to cooperate. You made a decision to cooperate. Yes, I made a decision to cooperate. During the 13-year period, was there anyone in the family who was above you? Messina would respond, no. As the boss, what power did you have? Messina, I murder, responsible for the family, make and break captains. He would also get into some of his roles, all sorts of different things involving Basciano. He would also ask, while meeting his co-defendants in the MDC, who was the acting boss? He would respond, Vincent Basciano. Did Vincent tell you why he killed Pizzolo? We talked about that. Now, I want to direct your attention to the Bonanno family itself, Messina. You mentioned you were the boss of the family for about 13 years. Messina would respond, quote, yes, that's correct. Five families operate, blah, 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 blah. Starting with the top position, what are the responsibilities of the boss? He talks about what the responsibilities of the boss are. They would also talk about what he did, the money that he would collect, etc. Now, as I said, Vinnie Gorgeous faced the death penalty in this case. Mm-hmm. In July of 2011, he'd be found guilty and he would ultimately get life in prison without the possibility of parole. To this day, Vincent Basciano fights his case. He tries to get appeals. He's never getting out. He's doing life. It's that simple. Right now, Vinnie Gorgeous has moved around. He would initially be sent to ADX. He would actually be out in ADX for a while. Then he'd go to Atlanta. Atlanta closed. He is now sitting at Coleman in Florida. Now, Vincent Basciano would pen a letter that he wrote about his life, quote, I'd rather die than compromise my values. I'm one of the few that followed the rules till the end. The truth of the matter is, you can say what you want about Vinnie Gorgeous Basciano. He is an old school gangster with old school values, and he will die in prison because of it. He had every possibility. He could probably flip. Now, I wonder, what would he have given the family? There was no one above him, quite honestly. But Vinny did what he did. He marched to the beat of his own drum. He was a rising star. He had mentors. He became what he became. And until the end, I think we can honestly say, I thought he was a very good gangster in the terms of being what a gangster is. You have to give him respect. He never flipped. He'll die in prison because of it.
I do give him respect for that. And I think you're right that he was a very effective gangster. To me, it comes back to the fact that some guys are just suited for power better than others. And it may, you know, someone like Basciano makes you really appreciate what it takes to stay in power for someone like a Messina or a Gambino or, you know, Gigante or those guys who were able to balance that, because man, that power can be tough sometimes. And I think we saw that Vinnie Basciano wasn't necessarily suited for that top spot.
No, he was kind of a head case, if you will. But at any rate, he was really, there's one or two guys left, but you know, Vinnie Gorgeous is really the last, you know, and look, he wasn't boss for very long. He was boss by name only, really. On the street, he was boss for a year, maybe. But most of the time he spent was in prison. And remember, in 2004, he was arrested. So, I mean, he really, under a year, was boss on the street. You know, his four sons are still out there. His wife's still out there. I do know that the author of the book, Vinnie Gorgeous, Tony DiStefano, he had actually mentioned in the book that he actually reached out to Vinnie Gorgeous to speak with him. And in typical Cosa Nostra fashion, Black Chick, guess what Vinnie Gorgeous said?
No thanks.
No interest. I will say, someday, Black Chick, if you ask me about five people I'd like to interview, Vinnie Gorgeous would be one of them. I would love to speak to him. Now, I do want to put kind of a bow on some of the people we talked about, Blackjack. Anthony Aiello, the individual that killed Randolph Pizzolo in Brooklyn, he was actually sentenced to 30 years in federal prison. He got a plea bargain. He gets out in 2031. So he will be out at some point. I actually did a video on Anthony Aiello on our YouTube channel. If you want to hear more, I talked about his life. He'd come from a mob family. Dom Ciccoli, a former friend to Vinnie Gorgeous, kind of his protege, if you will. He was actually one that would testify in other cases as well. And he was released from prison in 2013. Since then, he has been in the witness protection program. Patrick Patty from the Bronx, DeFilippo, in 2006, was convicted of federal racketeering and got 40 years in federal prison. He was not, though, someone that was arrested, and he was arrested, but he wasn't convicted in the George from Canada murder. There was no evidence to convict him. He would actually die in prison, though, several years ago. His release date was in 2038. Anthony Donato, the boyhood friend of Vinnie Gorgeous, was actually given 300 months for racketeering. He gets out, I believe, pretty soon, if I know myself. A few others here just before we wrap this show up. Michael Mancuso, the underboss of the family, ended up getting 15 years for his role in setting up the murder of Randy Pozzola. He was released in 2019. And according to the federal government, he is a higher up currently in the Bonanno crime family. He was actually just released from prison about 2 weeks ago, I believe. And that's pretty much it. Sal Vitale's in the program. I do want to say one thing, Blackjack, about Joey Messina. I don't know if I've told you this. I'm going to tell the audience this. From people that I know, I've heard through the grapevine, Joey Messina is not doing well, all indications. I believe he lives in Florida, if I know so myself. From what I understand, he is in poor health, and he is living alone, from what I understand. Really? I believe his wife has left him. He lives in assisted living, and is very old. I mean, he's not exactly in the best shape. Another guy that I think, if he wants to make some money, you know what he should do? Head on YouTube.
That's it.
So that's that. Vinnie Gorgeous Basciano, a fascinating guy, a fascinating story. That's that. Good show, Blackjack. This is a good one.
Yeah, good one.
Love it. But it was very detailed and well thought out. As always, like I said, some of the research in this show came from the great book, Vinnie Gorgeous by Anthony DeStefano. A lot of people all the time ask me about books that I like about the mob. Terrific book. I urge you to go buy it on Amazon or wherever you get your books. It's a really good one, with pictures and all sorts of stuff. So check that out. Blackjack, good to hear from you, man. It's nice to have you back. The show doesn't always go well without you. So
it's good to hear.
We're glad to have you back. As always, make sure you check us out on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. Oh, Blackjack, before we go, I need you to do something for me.
Yeah.
We did a little contest on the Twitter account. So I need you to right now, I'm going to give you 1 minute. Please go to our Twitter account, Blackjack. There is a post, I believe it was yesterday, where we had people come up with the best mob nicknames. There were about 75 answers to this. It was back on March 28th. And I want you right now, as I finish the show up, I want you to look through the list quickly, and I want you to pick your favorite answer. Can you do that for me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can tell you I don't have to go very far to find
it. Okay. I'm going to wrap up where to find us, and you come up with the one. And the winner that Blackjack picks will win a prize. What I need you to do is, if you're announced, I need you to reach out to me on our Twitter DM, and we'll get you connected with a prize. Follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. If you need to email me, you can, the Sit Down 777 at gmail.com. I also urge you, if you enjoy our mob content, go check us out on YouTube as well. Just search the Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast. You'll get all sorts of content. Make sure you subscribe there as well. Blackjack, have you come up with one?
I have.
Okay, please leave us, no doubt. Let's give him a little a drum roll, please.
All right. Our winner is, the Twitter handle is at Penzaman Franklin. The answer is Philip the Chicken Man Testa. I love the song Atlantic City. The Chicken Man is referenced in the song. It's the Chicken Man.
Yeah, you know, that's one that I know well. He was from Porter Street in Philadelphia. I you know, Philly guy. I got to be honest. I'm not quite sure how he got that name, quite honestly. Interestingly enough. So that's a good one, actually. So that individual can reach out to me, and we'll get him. There's a lot of great mob nicknames. I'm sure we could do a show just on that. So, thank you for picking that. We will be back next week, folks. As always, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week here on the Sit Down. Have a great day.